So welcome, welcome, and welcome again to this week's FFP, the pod show that gives the real fans a real voice on all of the football matters. No fence sitting, no umming and ahhing, no holding back.
You've gone out and signed this guy. He was one of your deadline day guys, and I just think he is not anything special at all.
I've got a friend who's a big West Ham fan, and he's saying it's the best West Ham team he's seen in the last 20 years.
My personal opinion on Harry Kane is I don't think he's a great striker. I said it last season, Mac is in the room, we have a bet, £10, I don't think Harry Kane will get 10 league goals this season.
My name is Jordan, I'm going to intro my panel this week. Before I do that, just a reminder, you can catch us on the iTunes library, you can download all of the shows this week's and all the previous shows, and also catch us on the SoundCloud page, Football Fans Podcast. Go and tell your friends all about that. So, kicking off with my panel this week, start off with our Manchester United supporter, Marvin. How's it going, my friend?
Not too bad, Jude. Not too bad.
Feeling good, feeling great?
3 points, 3-0, hangover, out the box.
Happy days.
Arsenal who? Yeah, yeah, go about it.
It's like that. All right, Marvin, Tim Sherwood.
Yeah.
A glorified blagger or a young manager with talent making his way through?
I'd probably say somewhere in the middle, right? I don't think he's a blagger. I think he can sometimes get the best out of players that you wouldn't expect to. Like, you look at Adebayor, I think he did a good job there. I don't think he's a good manager, though. He's somebody who, he's like a poor man's Pardew, for want of a better word, where the passion just seems to envelop everything they do. You know, he wears his heart on the sleeve, so, you know, he's doing a Mourinho-esque touchline run when the Villa are scoring, and, you know, when they're taking a beating, which happens more often than not. I mean, when Dyer's beating Micah Richards in the air, he's slumped. He's slumped in his seat. So I just think I think he is better than people give him credit for, but I think he's clearly struggling this year. There's not the money at Villa. And it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, next time I'm here, we're talking about a replacement for him, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Being generous.
Definitely. And making the first of our two debuts on the pod this week, our Liverpool fan, Stephen. Good evening, sir. How you doing?
Evening, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Nice, easy question to start off with yourself.
It's going to be about Klopp by any chance.
It's not. We're going to get to Klopp in a little bit, but not just yet. who's the better player? Payet? Mahrez? Or Mane?
Ooh. Ooh. You said an easy one to start, right?
No, that's not easy, man.
Current form, you've got to say probably Payet. I don't think West Ham are where they are unless Payet is playing the way he is right now. But over two seasons in the Prem, Mane and Mahrez probably got a bit more to give, I'd say. Rather strangely, it seems like Mahrez has been dropped.
I know. For the last two weeks,
I don't really understand where he's going. Brought him on at half time, completely changed the game again this weekend.
Something's going on there.
That's strange. Yeah. Mane's looked unbelievable in the 10 role for Southampton. I thought being a big difference, played up top on his own last season. I thought dropping off into the hole, power pace, can pick a pass, got a bit of vision, looks a real player. But on current form, Payet looks the real deal. United were looking at Mane. Apparently had bids turned down for Mane, so clearly there's interest in him. He's got the right age profile, I guess. Mahrez, he'd improve Liverpool right now. He'd improve United, I think, right now. I don't know.
It's open to debate.
I'm not convinced.
it's one of those
That's
things.
That's what I wanted to do, upset the United fan.
At Liverpool, I was like, yeah, definitely, he'll improve them. But then when you got to United, I was like, oh, slow down, you're getting too far. And the other one's Ronaldo for Newcastle. Those are four players which I think are probably playing at teams below their level. But you have to sort of worry if they went up, could they still perform?
And our second newbie of the pod, Mac, welcome, sir. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. Very well. Good, yourself?
Good. I'm very well, thank you. Very well. As a Tottenham fan, I want to know, Jermaine Defoe had two stints at your club. Why is he not starting at Sunderland, bearing in mind they're not blessed with goals? He's not even playing at Sunderland.
I don't know. I mean, you look at that, the forward line they've got. They've got, what, Fletcher, Defoe.
Barini.
Is Connor Wickham still there?
No, Wickham's Palace.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not really that many options. There's not really that much.
They started with the guy that was at Swansea started up or finished up top from this weekend.
Was it Danny Graham?
Danny Graham. Best contribution he had was starting a row with James McLean.
It was useless. Do you think that maybe, bearing in mind he's getting 80 grand a week there, you'd think that they'd play him just to justify that alone? Or do you think that his shooting boots, he's just done?
Well, whenever he played for Spurs, it's a well-known fact that Jermaine Defoe spends most of his time 2 yards past the last defender. He made his debut back at for Sunderland, back at White Hart Lane, and I went to the game. It was a common joke that Defoe offside. He must have done it about 8 or 10 times the entire game. And fair enough, you play in the MLS and then you come back. It's going to take you time to get used to it. But I think fair enough. He comes in, Poyet buys him. It's a big name signing. Fresh line's been drawn now. Allardyce is in. I don't think Allardyce will actually look at a name. He'll look at seeing how players play. And I can see him more so going for a Fletcher as opposed to a Defoe, because he'll probably work harder. He's a bit younger and probably give the team a little bit more. But there's not a great deal between all of them. They desperately need to spend.
I don't know. Like, I find Barini really, really poor. I think if I'm Jermaine Defoe, I'm sitting on the bench, I'm watching Barini.
You're pissed.
I can absolutely confirm that.
Barini's one of those people. He reminds me of Altidore as well, when Altidore's at Sunderland. They're just nicking a living.
Oh, come on. You can't compare him to...
He's a level up from Altidore.
Come on. He's bad, but it's not that bad.
At least he did have a good period at Sunderland 2 years ago.
Yeah, but... Okay, fair enough. Altidore is the epicenter of bonus. Yeah. But if I'm Defoe, like, he scored a really good goal in the derby last season, didn't he?
Yeah, worldy.
And you're right, he's that Inzaghi sort of goal hanger type role. But yeah, I think with Defoe, in the box, there's no one at that club better, right? It's just a case of Sunderland have so much poorness, they have so little link up play. I think what they're saying is, all Defoe will give you is that fox in the box, and they need some grafters up there. Do you know what I mean?
He's not a Big Sam player.
I would still start him. If I'm Big Sam, I'll look at that. I mean, I actually think Fletcher's okay, but he's been ravaged by injuries. Do you know what I mean? But I still start Defoe in front of Barini every time. I think Barini is awful.
I can't see him going for Defoe up front. As you said, it's not a Big Sam player. When's the last time Big Sam actually had...
He plays a target man with midfielders coming off, winning flicks, little layoffs. Yeah. You either go for a big man, little man, which you've got to go back to the 4-4-2. That's going back 10 years. No one's going to go back to that now.
Let's move on to Klopp now, because I think we've battered Sunderland over the last few weeks. And let's see how Big Sam can get on over the next few weeks. They've got their derby next week as well. Let's go on to Klopp. He was the story last week. Stephen, was you first of all pleased with the appointment? And did you see anything on Saturday? I know it's only one game. You had him for a couple of days probably in training.
Yeah, there was a bit
there. Anything you see in there that you think, oh, okay, you're impressed by?
You had to be happy. I thought we were going nowhere in the end. I didn't mind Rodgers. I still don't think Rodgers is a bad coach. I think Sir Rodgers may resurface again soon, maybe Aston Villa. So I didn't think he'd done a bad job, but it just had gone stale, I thought, the last couple of months. There didn't seem to be any, there was no real direction in the finish. So you had to be happy with the change. Klopp's a big name. It's probably the first big signing we've actually made, a world-class signing we've made, player or manager, for about 10 years. So purely on that basis, you had to be happy with the signing or with the appointment. Overall, though, I was more leaning towards an Ancelotti myself as a signing, as a Liverpool fan. I think he just guarantees you winning something, whereas I think Klopp's still... I think he's still a risk. You know, he's done it in Germany. You can't dispute what he's done in Germany to get Dortmund against that kind of Bayern juggernaut to win two league titles there is an incredible achievement. Just think the Prem is different and you kind of need to settle in and teams play differently and kind of it's not a two or a three horse race. It's a four horse race, but with the team at the bottom could take you apart on any given day.
Do you think his philosophy will be conducive to how Liverpool need to play? Do you think that what everything he's been praised for, the high pressing, all of that stuff,
gegenpressing,
work? Yes, that's what it calls, isn't it? Yeah.
Gegenpressing. Well, there was plenty of evidence of it on Saturday. I think it's the first time Spurs have been outrun all season. It's definitely the furthest we've run all season. Lana broke a sweat, so that had he's done something there straight away. I don't know. Over, I think Spurs have had a problem with this because I think Spurs play a very similar high-pressing game, high line. I don't know whether you can stick 38 games in the Prem, 20 games in the Europa League, a bit of a cup run, and still be doing that in the final 6 weeks, 7 weeks of a season. That's where I think it might run into, because you can't let up in the Prem. You can have Bournemouth, who, you know, struggling at the moment, Newcastle struggling. If you turn up and aren't completely at it, they'll take you apart. They'll do a number on you. So to be able to, if that gegenpressing or the high pressing game is going to survive, there's going to have to be a drastic change in training regimes and all the rest of it. I'm just not sure. I'm not convinced yet. You'd have to see a season whether that'll work come the last couple of weeks of the season if you want to win a league title, or whether it works for six, seven months of a season, and then there's a natural drop off.
Marv, do you think that he has to finish top four or win a cup in order for Liverpool to justify of having sacked Brendan Rodgers? Because the thinking to me says, well, we've sacking Rodgers because we feel you can't get top four, so we're going to bring in someone who we feel can. If he doesn't get top four or a cup, do you feel that makes the sacking weird?
Well, I was devastated that Rodgers got fired, right?
I'm with you on that.
He was single-handedly running that club into the ground, and I was loving every second of it.
But he had a philosophy.
Tell me a manager that doesn't have a philosophy nowadays.
It was all about that group.
They spent too much time in the library, all of them. I think the issue for Klopp is that the top four, I don't think any of them, the conventional top four, shall we say, are playing phenomenal football. City, maybe, but United, I mean, as a United fan, we're hot and cold. Arsenal will be hot and cold as long as Arsene Wenger manages them. Yeah. And we've all seen what's going on with Chelsea. So I think that's the challenge in itself, the fact that actually there's a chance that, you know, that somebody's going to drop out of that four. So I think there is going to be some pressure. I actually think if he doesn't get top four, I think it would be all right, providing he's fifth or sixth and he has a nice cup run. I think he can always blame the squad. The squad isn't great. I thought Origi was appalling. I didn't like him at all. I thought he was just full of running. I mean, they've got like five or six strikers in the club. There's something going on with Sturridge, right? Mentally, I mean, so I read an article that said it was Jordan Ibe got into a tackle with him. I just think Klopp has a lot to do. What annoys me is the fact some of the names that they're sort of linking, like Royce and people like that. What, just because he's Dortmund manager, he could just go and cherry pick?
Yeah, come on, mate.
At the end of the day, these players aren't stupid. They still know who Liverpool are, right? And
it's the British media, ain't it?
Yeah.
Quote a source and so-and-so signing. He's signing Lewandowski wants to come and play.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just thought, it was rude. I think he should have shut it down in the press conference today. I know my limits here, guys. Give me a chance. But I think because of his philosophy and the way they do press, I think he hasn't got the players at Liverpool to do that this season. He hasn't had a pre-season with them. So I think that's his get out of jail card. A cup run, I could see it. I honestly could. But as long as they finish fifth, sixth, they take some big scalps at Anfield in front of the Kop, I think they'll be giving him a bit of time.
He's all talking right. Those players up, though.
The players he's got.
As the players he's got. I know we're saying the squad isn't great, but
he's kind of got to do that.
Yeah, he's got to do that. He can't say I've got to delve straight into the transfer market. I've got to buy everyone.
And he's got to do that, but then it's very hard to fall back on that as an excuse at the end of the season if all of a sudden you finish seventh and then go, well, actually,
yeah, okay,
the squad was awful. Said, yeah. I was lying before. Okay, I was just trying to get the best. So he's kind of built them up to a point now. You know, you could have just come in and he could have eased himself in and said, I'm buying time. I need to have a look at the squad, see what I've got. Let's see where we are in January. He's come straight in and kind of like, we've got a decent midfield. Origi, I tried to sign him at Dortmund. Like the look of my back four, I got a decent keeper.
I think he was practically saying that James Milner was world class. He was saying that technically he's the best player at the club. And I mean, fair enough, he runs around a lot and he's got a good shot on him and everything else. But
isn't part of what he's got to do when he comes in is really big up the players.
Until the transfer.
I mean, you've got Pochettino, your lot played the Mac on Saturday. Is he that much different in his philosophy to Pochettino? Because from what I can see, he presses from the front. He likes to have lots of, you know, high intensity, lots of energy. Is there much difference between the two managers?
Well, Poch says they're two completely different managers because Poch says that Spurs defend from, i.e. Harry Kane, backwards, whereas Liverpool or a Dortmund team will sit much deeper. In essence, it's very much for muchness. And I think we all saw in the first half of the game that both teams were running around like blue-ass flies, not really much end product.
It was like watching a primary school game.
Yeah,
you just had 20 outfield players just charging around wherever the ball was. But no quality when anyone had it.
You know what, though? There was a couple of players on the pitch, and it made me so sad because I was watching them and I was thinking, are you telling me you haven't got a youngster that can... Like, in G for Spurs, he was running around and he must have given the ball away.
I lost count.
Or six times in the first half. And I was thinking, you've gone out and signed this guy. He was one of your deadline day guys. And I just think he is not anything special at all. And it's a testament to the fact that these guys are coming in from the continent, buying from, you know, the lesser leagues. And are they taking the time to look at what they've got in their ranks? And it's the same. I mean, fair play to Klopp. He went, you know, Saturday, first day on the job, went and watched the under-18s play, make sure there's a couple of paparazzis there. You know, they always go to the under-18 games, don't they?
Being caught in the pub for having a drink like four times last week.
Yeah. So it's like, fair enough. He's looking at what he's got and it's going to take time for him. But Pochettino, I think because you guys aren't losing, he's getting away with signing a few duds overall. I thought Dembele played, who he's had there for ages, and I thought Dembele was pretty good.
Dembele will blow hot and cold far too often. He has a game like that where he looks, well, not best player on the planet, but he will comfortably beat players, he'll shield players off. He reminds me a lot of Tom Huddleston. He's got the big upper body strength, he's got a good touch, but the end product, he doesn't do anything. I think Dembele scored twice in two, three seasons.
Oh, really?
He's scored like practically nothing.
He was that poor.
But what's his best position? Because I've seen him play DM a couple of times for...
I generally don't know. The thing is, Pochettino doesn't know his best position, but he's never played... I don't think he's ever played like 10, 20 games in a row. Pochettino has generally started when he's got a fully fit squad. He's gone with Bentaleb and Mason in the middle of the park, I'm with you there. It doesn't really offer you anything. They don't score goals. They're not really defensive midfielders. They almost just sit in the middle of the park and play the ball nice and prettily from side to side.
Well, it goes back to what George said, right? Because you're talking to me, is Sherwood a blagger or is he one of the best young coaches? Well, you know, who brought them through? It wasn't Pochettino that brought those two through. I'm not saying that's a compliment because I hate Mason.
Diamond on Sherwood.
I genuinely, and I've got slated for this, I don't know what Pochettino's doing so differently. Like, they haven't lost the game, fair play, but I'm not turning up and watching. I'm not watching Spurs and thinking, wowza, this guy's come in, he's made a real difference. Do you know what I mean?
No. I thought that was disappointing from Spurs because we were clearly, it was high intensity, it was pressure, but there was nothing, we didn't offer a whole lot in the game. Spurs is a settled outfit.
Yeah.
If you've got anything about you, I thought Spurs should be putting Liverpool away on Saturday.
Thought Spurs against, if that was a Brendan Rodgers team, Spurs probably would have put them to the sword. But I think Spurs get caught up in the story half the time. So they're thinking,
it's Klopp's day.
Yeah, it's Klopp's day. It's the same thing like opening day of the season when we did beat you, we were awful. And you were on top for about 20 minutes. And I was looking. And then as soon as we scored, it was like, you know what? We are at Old Trafford. We probably should lose this. And it was, let's just not lose by anymore. I actually think it's a mentality, right? I don't think Pochettino's bringing anything superb. I think he got lucky. Not lucky, but Kane had a worldy season. And that, you know, they put Chelsea to the sword and stuff like that. But I'm not buying what everyone's selling there.
Mac, I'm sure you heard the comments from Carragher regarding Liverpool saying that they're turning into Tottenham.
And our
regular Tottenham fan, obviously he went absolutely apeshit over that. What's your view on that? Do you feel like, A, was you insulted by that, or was there some truth in what he was saying? And B, is who do you think is the bigger club at the moment? Forget history, who is the bigger club?
There was masses of truth in that.
Yeah.
I'm a Tottenham fan first.
I was a Tottenham fan. They had their say last week. We're going to come back to you. Carragher was talking a lot of sense.
They are very much like Spurs at the moment. If you look at it, over the last 10 years, Liverpool have, won two cups. Spurs won one. They've both been hovering around 4th, 5th, 6th place. Both clubs have sold their best players season on season the last few years. Yeah, they are practically morphing into the same club. Liverpool are becoming very Spursy, dare I say it.
What an uplifting thought.
So that's why Rodgers got sacked.
Do you understand what he was trying to say, Carragher? Do you think that he maybe went a little bit too far, or what were your views on that? I got what he was saying.
To me, what he was trying to say was Liverpool, formerly 18-time league winners, 5 Champions League, were a big club. We are probably no longer considered a big club by the clubs that now consider themselves a big club. As you were saying, no one cares really who we're signing. We don't sign world-class talent. We're very rarely a threat to win a league title. We're no longer in Europe. We struggle to get in the top four. So we've slowly dropped out of being a guaranteed top four side. We're very slowly becoming that fifth, sixth position. But we're probably in a bracket slightly above Spurs where the name does a bit sells more for it. Us, sells us a little bit more. We can still attract maybe a slightly better quality of player. Mm. We can attract a Klopp as a manager where Spurs possibly couldn't.
Mm. Yeah.
We generate huge amounts of money globally because of the name, because of the brand. But as the team, we are becoming Spurs.
One word answer to the two of you, or actually all three of you, who will finish higher, Tottenham or Liverpool?
I've got to say Liverpool, George.
What did your
gritted
head say?
Teeth. I don't know. A lot depends over the next couple of weeks. We've got a couple of big games. I'll say Liverpool purely because of the Klopp factor.
Marvin?
I'm going Liverpool as well, George.
Mac?
Got to put my heart on my sleeve. Got to say Spurs. It'll be close. Very close.
Your face is not convincing. We'll go with it. Let's move on now to Harry Kane, because he appears to be struggling in terms of goals. I don't think he's playing actually that badly, but he's got 2 goals, Mac, this season. 1 in Europe, 1 in the league.
Hell of an oggy.
Yeah, the own goal doesn't get taken off. He scored 1 for England as well. Did he score against...
Dead rubber Euro qualifiers trying to get him.
is bearing in mind the season he had last year where he was on fire.
Yeah.
He was the main guy. If he continues the way he's going, Walcott and Vardy continue the way they're going, Rooney's guaranteed a place at the Euros, and Sturridge, if fit, is the best finisher of the bunch, could he miss out the Euros next year?
He could very conceivably miss out. Mm. I'm of the opinion that this run won't last forever. He's getting into the right positions. He's finishing, whereas last year it was going in and everything he touched was going in the back of the net. This year it's not. He's still making the right runs. He's still working incredibly hard for the team. I just don't think he's actually getting the rub of the green. I don't think it'll last all season. I think the likes of... We'll have to see about Vardy, whether he actually kind of manages to last the whole season in terms of continuing his form. Walcott, again, fitness. Sturridge, fitness.
So he might get him by default.
Yeah, he might get him. But no, I mean, I generally think he'll actually find some form. I'm hoping more than anything else at this rate. But
what do you think is the reason behind his slow start? Is it just a bad patch, or do you think the pressure of being the guy now to deliver?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, it's a bit of the possibly second season syndrome where defenders know how to play against him now and they know what he has to offer. And I think it's a little bit of that. And I think he is probably a little bit short on confidence, but he's still trying incredibly hard for the team. I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to play every single game because Spurs don't have any other strikers. So he will get a run of games. Absolutely guaranteed.
Is that part of the problem, though, that maybe he knows that I'm
the guy and
there's no one else really to help me out?
No, that is part of the problem.
I've got to deliver every game or we're going to lose.
That is Daniel Levy's fault 100% for not going and spending 20 million and buying Berahino, or offering £5.88 and a packet of Haribo for Berahino up front. It was, Levy did himself no favours with that whatsoever. And he needed a Berahino. He needed a Defoe-like player and didn't get him. And that will ultimately probably cost Tottenham over the course of the year. and potentially Harry Kane as well, but I'll have to wait and see.
Marvin, what do you think Harry Kane needs to score this season to deem, make sure that last year wasn't a one-off year? What's the minimum he needs to score to show people that? Because I know you're big into young English talent. What's the bare minimum that he needs to hit this year to show that last year just wasn't a worldy one-off year?
You know what, George? Regardless of what he scores, he goes to the Euros. I don't see Roy as big enough to drop him.
Okay, so on that point, I'll pick up on that point. How many strikers are we thinking Roy will take to the Euros?
Well, I thought it would be three, and then he'd have Walcott in that sort of midfieldy, wingy type role.
Who are the three?
So I would probably say, if we're getting full fitness, right?
Everyone's fit, yeah.
It'd be Sturridge, Rooney and Kane.
Okay, so if Vardy continues his form, he doesn't get in.
Oh, this Vardy thing is killing me. It's killing me.
if he scored 20 goals for Leicester this year.
Do you remember when Michael Ricketts had that? Remember when Michael Ricketts scored a few goals for Bolton? And he got in. I think he got one cap, and then we never saw him again. And then he got the Pie Man. Was it Pie Man Ricketts they used to call him? I'm really going back in my memory. And let me be clear, right? Vardy is playing very well in a Leicester side that is surprising the Premiership, especially under the leadership of Ranieri, right? He is playing really well. And I think it would be so refreshing if an England manager picked a squad right now, he would pick Vardy and he wouldn't pick Kane because it would be purely on form. But no England manager has had the front to do that in quite some time, probably as long as I've been loving football. Even when Venables was doing it at Euro 96, Shearer was on a terrible patch. Fair play, he had a fantastic tournament, but they succumb to the pressure every time. And actually, Kane looks probably better for England than he does for Spurs at the moment.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, when I watch Kane, it's one of those things where he's getting the ball. I would say 90% of his touches are back to goal. And I just don't think Spurs are helping him enough. Ericsson is very sometime-ish. And as Max said, you know, when you've got people like Mason and Bentaleb there, they're not going to be, you know, pinging in slide rule passes and things like that. It's just not, it's not conducive for him to play really well. And I think, you know, the Prem is not a stupid league. It doesn't let somebody have a fantastic season without talking and thinking a bit more carefully about them in the second season. So I personally think Kane goes. I think Vardy's playing really well. If he continues this form all the way up to next year, which I know he won't, then he should go as well. And I think Daniel Sturridge needs to look at his fitness, right? If this is going to be, I think it's got, with Daniel Sturridge, it's not so much how many he has to score, it's how many is he going to play? Do you know what I mean? Like, every time you think he's over something, he's just sitting on the bench. And I don't know if it's just me. I watch him on the bench. He just looks kind of like, I saw him handing out mints the other day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He's not bothered.
Yeah, he's not bothered. And it goes back to what we said ages ago, right? One day, Sturridge got up. He was playing as a team. There was Gerrard. There was Sterling. There was Suarez, right? He was looking around and thinking, I'm in some bloody good company. Now, Danny Ings is injured. Stop the phone. Hold the phone. Do you know what I mean? Danny Ings is injured. We're in trouble.
But now's the time, if you're the big superstar England striker that you claim to be, now's the time to step up and you become the next star of Liverpool Football Club.
But what if he isn't? Do you know what I mean? Like, you got to, like, the thing about Sturridge is, there's not many places for him to go after Liverpool, right?
Because he's been done at City.
Problem.
Yeah. He's been at Chelsea. And I just think it goes without saying that when there's a lot of quality around you, it gives you a bit more time because defenders have to focus on other players. Now, defenders will focus on him. Fair enough, Benteke is also having injury problems, but I mean, no one, you know, Henderson and Lucas aren't keeping anyone up at night. So, I mean, all that being said, Kane goes for me, and I think he'll probably still end up with 10 league goals, and that'd be enough.
And I think if you're a goal down with 20 minutes to go, personally speaking, I'd need a goal, and you've got the choice of Kane or Vardy. Personally speaking, I'd rather go for Kane.
Okay.
I think that's more likely to put the fear of God, not necessarily put the fear of God, but
worry more defenders.
Yeah, worry more defenders.
Stephen, no one in Europe petrified of Harry.
Stephen, do you agree with Marvin that he's going regardless, or do you think he needs to get that 10 to 15 goals just to keep Vardy at bay? Because if Kane gets 10 to 15 and Vardy gets 18, Kane's going. But if Kane doesn't get 10 goals and Vardy gets 15, 20, it becomes then a...
I think Marvin's probably right. I think Harry Kane goes no matter what happens there.
Should he though? He probably will, but do you think he should?
No, I don't think. I mean, my personal opinion on Harry Kane is I don't think he's a great striker. I said it last season. Mac is in the room. We have a bet, £10. I don't think Harry Kane will get 10 league goals this season. That's not it. He's a decent player. I don't think he's top level prem. I don't think he's international quality. He's got no main strength.
That was going to be my question to Mac afterwards.
You look at Daniel Sturridge, yeah, he gets injured when he trips over a blade of grass. But if you give him a ball, he'll bang it in the top corner. I don't think Harry Kane is not quick. He's not particularly good in the air. We watched even the Arsenal game. He got bullied, the one me and Mac watched together. Yeah. He's not overly strong. He wouldn't put him in the league of a Benteke for holding ball up. I don't think he's an exceptional finisher. I thought he got lucky with a lot of finishes last season. If he was on top of his game, if he was a decent finisher, Spurs beat Liverpool 2-0.
He's so loved by the Spurs fans. Like, I've been to White Hart Lane a couple of times this season, and the Arsenal Capital One Cup, when he did like a scissor kick, which was well saved, right? Spurs had been beaten, right? Flamini scored a goal that Kane ain't scoring, right?
And Flamini scored twice. And
after that game, everyone was like, oh, but did you see Harry? Did you see that scissor kick? And I'm thinking, you lost and he didn't score. Do you know what I mean? The cheers when they announced the lineup at Spurs, he's one of our own. They're really put him on this massive pedestal. And I wish, no disrespect to Spurs fan, but take stock of the situation here. This guy is struggling. He's not got the supply. He scored 2 goals all season. He's got no one to give him a rest if he needs one. Like, let's call a spade here. Do you know what I mean?
All right. Okay, let's move on now to... I want to talk about West Ham's away form, because I can't quite work out. And I'm hoping I'm hoping you guys can help me out with this, because it's kind of phenomenal. Not only are they winning away games, they've beaten now Arsenal, City, Liverpool and Palace. 3 good teams at the moment. Well, Liverpool doing all right. And they're doing it in style. But they're doing it in style. They haven't like put 10 men behind the ball for 85 minutes and got the ball in the back post and Carroll's put it in. They're playing good football. What's going on, Mac? How are they doing?
Yeah,
this?
It's a very good point. I mean,
it's not a fluke anymore, is it? There's
clearly it's not a fluke anymore. When you beat that caliber of team, you must be doing something right. You could say that they maybe caught Arsenal cold first game of the season. I mean, Arsenal didn't look too great that game. But, I mean, I saw that City game and they absolutely, that first half, they totally deserved to be in front. They've got a lot of pace in that team. I think Payet is a fantastic player. And they've just got a bit of energy about them. They actually look like they've got a bit of pace and they're playing the West Ham way. Which obviously
we're going to ban that phrase from the podcast.
What is the West
you
Ham
didn't know
way?
That, so just future reference. Anyone comes to this podcast, that's been banned.
Fair enough. But no, it's I mean, they've had those wonderful performances away, yet they've got absolutely thumped by Bournemouth and Leicester at home, which makes the away results even more amazing. Really, I've got a friend who's a big West Ham fan, and he's saying it's the best West Ham team he's seen in the last 20 years.
Really? Better than the Lampard, Cole, Ferdinand, De Canio team?
Yeah, he's better than that even. And yeah, I just think they've actually...
I don't know about that 7 games into a season.
A big statement that is.
8 games into a season, that's a big call. That's a big call. And you get to the end of the season still in the league and then start talking about greatest sides you've ever seen down at West Ham. That's a crazy statement.
What do you think is the secret behind why they're winning so many away games? And playing so well. They're not fluking it getting last minute winners.
They've got some decent players. I think it's slightly indicative of the Premiership this season. There's a lot of teams that are prepared to sit back a little bit. They'll draw the so-called bigger side on. Then when they get it, they can play football and they're lightning quick on the break. I think it's as simple as that.
The percentage stats for away wins this season is higher than home wins. So do you think there's any kind of correlation between teams generally are playing better away and winning games away with West Ham, or are they just a kind of separate case of...
I think it is something that's been seen in the Prem this season. I think there are teams when they go away, they're organised, they're prepared to sit in, but as opposed to 2, 3, 4 years ago where you've got a smaller club going to a United, a Liverpool, an Arsenal, all they wanted to do was shut up shop and hold out for a 0-0 draw. these sides have a plan when they win the ball back. When you're at home, you're expected to attack. English crowds demand that you attack. We were over at Spurs-Arsenal with Mac watching the Carling Cup tie. Spurs passed the ball around for 30 seconds at the back. The crowd were booing them. Don't hold the ball back there. Get it up the field. Get on the attack. When you are forced to do that as a home side, if you're organised and sensible as the away side, you can draw them on, win the ball back, and you hit them on the attack, on the counter. If you've got enough quick players who can use the ball properly when you get it back, you are going to cause a lot of problems for sides. And I think West Ham have mastered the art of that in the early stage of the season. I also think the fact they came back early.
I was going to say, it's their month for everyone else. Yeah.
They almost look like they're up to speed in terms of pre-season, where it looked like to me a lot of Prem sides had used the first 3-4 weeks of the season as the final stages of their pre-season. And when they came back from the international break, that's when they were going to be fully tuned up. So I think West Ham kind of got a jump on everyone. With that kind of early start. So I'd imagine it will catch up with them by the end of the season, though.
Marvin, the next three away games are Watford, Spurs, and then you lot. If they can win those three away games, well, you say all, but they've beaten better teams than Watford, Spurs, and United.
Yeah.
So do you think that they'll burn out eventually, or do you think they can sustain?
So, Jude, what is it?
They're going to win every away game, obviously.
Yeah. It's four wins and one draw, isn't it?
Yes.
But who's that one draw, Jude? Let me tell you.
Go on.
Sunderland. Sunderland. And as far
they're 2-0 down as well.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they are the overachievers. The Prem always has an overachiever first half of the season, right? And for me, it's West Ham because they're just hot and cold. Credit to Bilic, right? They have taken some big scalps, no bigger scalp than City. But as I said earlier, they go as far as Payet and Victor Moses. Right, I don't see anybody else in that team. I'm thinking, I know you said Lanzini, but I don't think any of them are, you know, really setting the Premier League apart from those two, especially Victor Moses, because he's had a hard time, right? Yeah. He's been one of those check chasers and gone to the wrong team at the wrong time. He's playing, I was really impressed with him. He's playing superb football. And Payet, again, is one of those people, you know, every now and again, a little gem's plucked from the French league or you know, one of those leagues. So I just think it will take the Prem. The Prem always catches up, as Steve was saying. You know, give it until December and people will say to, you know, if they're playing United or even Watford, they'll say to Kapuwe, you sit on Payet, you don't let him do anything. Simple as that.
And then we'll see how
good And then we'll see how it goes. And even if it's Victor Moses down the left wing, right, they'll play a Valencia right wing against Man United. They'll figure it out and it will go wrong. I think the one person that's pissed is Allardyce, right? Because he's probably thinking, are you getting Bilic? See, he can't do any better than me. Well, Sam, I think you're wrong there. But, I mean, credit to them. And I think, back to what Steve's saying, they are playing with no fear when they go away. I think the stats that you mentioned about away teams doing better at the moment is that even me, I'll be the first to be, you know, on United's back if I'm at a home game and it's not coming off, you know, 10, 15 minutes. The fans are baying for blood. They want to see goals. They want to see wins. I mean, Spurs probably is one of the worst I've been to. If Carl Walker misplaces pass one, he is done for.
Mind you, Carl Walker does it on a regular basis.
And but like, that ain't going to help you.
Away from Upton Park, without the pressure, just on the road, expected to lose, they're pulling out the good ones. As I said to you earlier, I'd take the Palace win with a pinch of salt, right? Because Gale was stupid, right? It was two striker tackles. And I actually thought Palace would probably run him close if it wasn't for that. And the two goals they scored, we're talking injury time when, you know, playing a whole second half with 10 men, it's gonna catch up with you. But credit to Bilic, he's doing his thing. But I'd be surprised if they're in the top seven come March, April.
Let's get this week's Tells the Scully Cap, please, Marvin, before we go into our final topic. How did Mr. Petacek get on this week?
I mean, the guy's coming into his own now, isn't he? He is. But one thing I will say is, Tells of the Scully Cap, like, he needs...
I was looking forward to this.
He needs...
The highlight of the week.
He needs to like games like this, he keeps a clean sheet. He has to. Troy Deeney, my heart goes with Troy Deeney because he scored like 20 plus in 5 years. He doesn't even look like scoring. I mean, Chet pulled off one good save against him, if my memory serves me correctly.
It was pretty routine save.
And Agallo, I had him in my fantasy team, and seeing this guy pop up with goals here and there, there was one when he was clean through, and it was so off target. It was unreal. And I've got a friend at work who's a Watford fan, and I was just like, you're doomed. You're doomed. Kapuwe looked great, but... I mean, this is a game you'd expect Cech to play well. He played well, and that's all there is to it. It's typical Cech, to be honest. But you got to give Arsenal some credit. They're keeping clean sheets game in, game out. I mean, United was a sad point for me, but again, he pulled off that save, as we mentioned before, about Martial. Yeah. So he's doing really well, and it doesn't matter if it's Gabriel or Mertesacker alongside Koscielny. They seem to have a good fit. I mean, I'm surprised because is he injured still?
No.
So Bellerin's just keeping him out.
He's the right back.
Yeah,
the moment,
which surprised me, right? I thought he was going to go in. So did I. Arsenal seems like he's got his back four. He's got his keeper. He seems pretty comfortable with
that. And just briefly, looking forward to tomorrow's game against Bayern Munich, are these the sort of games where Cech could be the difference?
Is Cech going to start, right? Or is Arsenal going to...
That's a good question as well.
I think Ospina's injured, isn't he?
Conveniently injured.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
You're injured today, David.
I'm telling you, you're
injured. Broken your leg.
Just for 48 hours. It's the world's quickest leg break injury.
I mean, for me,
you need a world class keeper.
Are you at home tomorrow?
We're at home tomorrow, yeah.
I mean, yeah, this is where it comes into their own, but I can't see Arsenal winning that game.
No.
And I don't know how much. I think because they've lost the opening two, there's all these sort of rumours swirling around, like, does Arsene even want to play his best players
nonsense.
In this game?
Well, his starting lineup, though, says maybe it's not nonsense. I would have thought playing Watford, he'd have rested a few. That's classic Wenger every other season.
I thought Sanchez might start on the bench, to be fair.
He went full strength to win that, which, you know, is he going to play all of them again tomorrow night?
Did he maybe mug off Zagreb in the first game with a second team, and then he thought, actually, you know what, this ain't going too well. Let's just tell, the narrative is now, we're going to focus on the Premier League, when really he was going for the Champions League, got embarrassed on game
possibly,
one.
Possibly, it might be the end of the world if he focused on the league, though. Like Marvin was saying earlier, I think the Premiership's wide open. So if you actually knuckle down and focus just on the league for a season, I think there's a chance there for Arsenal to win it, whereas they kind of get their attention gets diverted by playing in Europe.
Yeah.
They have a sad luck story every season with Arsenal. Takes them 3-4 weeks to recover in the league. By the time they recover and go in their 14-match unbeaten run, they're out of it. So this season, maybe if he does focus on the league, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
You see, the thing is, I think Arsenal could probably surprise even me tomorrow because the world expects them to lose. I think it goes without saying. So I think when the chips are down and when they're doubted and there's no pressure, that's when they always play the best
football.
They play some good football. I mean, from a personal perspective, if Arsenal win the league this season, then I won't know what to do with myself. Because
you don't know what you do with yourself. How do you think I feel?
Because for me, there's two factors. Arsenal always probably play the best football overall in the Prem, but they don't win the league, right? That's the first factor. And the second factor is, that's the thing I have over Arsenal fans. That's the
you
thing.
Might play good football.
That's the thing. Like, where's your leagues? Where's your leagues? And they made that stupid mistake of listing all the years they've won it in the Emirates, and it's just stopped. There's a couple of FA Cups there, but there's no Prems there. So it will shock the world, right? If they win the Prem, I will have to eat quite a lot of humble pie myself. But it's, you know, I think, as we said, I mean, Wenger took a lot of criticism for only signing Cech. But I think Cech gets you another 6-7 points in the Prem. And that might just be enough to get him over the line.
All right. We normally have a section, well, we do have a section this week called Pundit Watch, but we normally have a pundit to pick on. We don't this week. So I want to get from you to you guys, who you guys like as pundits and who you think is awful. I think from the usual panel, myself, Marvin, Natasha and Ollie, the only pundit I think we all agree we like is Graeme Souness.
Gary Neville.
Okay, Gary Neville's a
good one. Yeah, let's get it straight. The guys are Gary Neville.
And Gary Neville.
Ex-United player.
We all like those two. Is there anyone that you rate or think is absolutely shocking?
Peter Beagrey. Absolutely awful.
Doesn't he do like Division 2 or something?
Yeah, he does Football League Show. He's, yeah. Honestly, I've never met a worse pundit in all my life.
You do love football for watching that. Wow.
He just doesn't really seem to know what he's talking about.
That's a problem in a pundit, because you've got to say that's an issue.
I've actually sat there and watched a programme. He actually came out with the phrase, it's like, that's a bit of 6 and 2, or it's a bit of 6 and 3. Not 6 and 2 threes. He generally came out with the phrase, that's a bit 6 and 3. It's just like...
It never beats David Pleat. He's bringing on a playmaker here. So what the manager wants him to do is make the play. I mean, that's the lowest level of punditry you will ever find right there. You can find a dog on the street who knows what the playmaker is meant to do. This guy's been paid a fortune to sit in the co-commentary box, and that's what he's dishing out to the public.
What did Michael Owen come out with? Is it like keeper sweeper?
Sweeper keeper.
Did he start that phrase?
He was on about it during the Spurs Liverpool game at the weekend.
Could that be the new thing, right? That's what they were talking about.
They were trying to cover over it.
Huddle backed him, though, didn't he? Because they were talking about Neuer, and then they were like, oh, yeah, that could be the thing. Do you think? And the commentator be a thing where we see, you know, the keeper playing from the back?
I think Huddle feels sorry for Michael Owen when he's doing punditry commentary with him, because Huddle actually offers something.
Yeah.
Hoddle picks out little things in a game that you maybe don't see. That's all you want from your pundit. You're not seeing everything. He's picking something. Mike Lowen's just telling me exactly what I'm looking at. He's just saying it back to me through the TV screen. It's awful.
Somebody just mentioned, you know, they're getting paid a fortune. And I'm starting to think, you know, BT Sport paid a lot for Prem and a lot for Champions League. Are they getting paid a fortune? Because, I mean, I'm watching Robbie Savage every morning and I'm thinking, no way, you're not getting
there's
that
no
much.
Way you're yeah. on 3 mil a year. Yeah.
I mean, who did Match of the Day with Shearer? Was it Genus this weekend?
This week, no, it was... Oh, who was it? Shearer and...
I thought it was Genus, was it not?
No. Oh, who was it? It's going to annoy me now.
They had Kilbane on.
Oh,
Kilbane. No, with the beard,
yeah. He's actually okay.
He's all
yeah. I don't think Kilbane's too bad.
I don't think he's too bad.
But you know what? My issue is, Jermaine Genius, what's going on with you? Like, I need to know. Like, one minute you were injured, and then you were at QPR, and you were just gone. Like, and now you're on the rotation.
Has he officially retired?
Yeah.
I don't think he has. I don't think he's officially retired.
I need him to do something, because it's unnerving watching this player who's relatively young, not really offer anything. But what are you doing? Like, I need to know a little bit more.
He's all right. I don't think he's that bad.
I tell you what, Gary Lineker covers up a lot of cracks on that punditry, that panel. Like,
great presenter.
He will lead them, even if they don't want to go. Like, especially with Wright, he'd be like, Ian, so what do you think? Oh, man, I don't know. Well, tell me, like, what does your gut say? Ian, what I don't need is words. I just need you to just give me, you know, he'll really take the horse to the water, dunk it in and make it drink, right? And he's covering up a lot there. But overall, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where there isn't a lot of top quality, but BT Sport takes the biscuit.
I was just going to say, actually, BT's coverage this weekend on the Spurs-Liverpool game was absolutely dreadful. Did you see the build-up? Steve McManaman's a hero of mine. Like, ex-Liverpool player, he's my favourite Liverpool player growing up. His depiction of Klopp's new regime at Liverpool was like a five-year-old school kid. He just drew arrows all over a page. Yeah, yeah. He got a shot of Dortmund playing in the Bundesliga up, and just drew arrows all over the page. Just goes, look at them running around there. You'll see Liverpool do this. They'll run around a lot now that Klopp's the manager.
Thanks, Steve. Insightful stuff.
It's just, BT is they are about as low as it gets. Sky's kind of the pinnacle of where it's got to.
Yeah.
BT, Match of the Day, somehow I've managed to hold the middle ground from BT.
That
is incredible.
Because the thing is, BT seem to think this picture-in-picture thing is like cutting-edge technology. So there's been two occasions. One, when I was watching the Spurs-United game where they went to the ref. There was like a ref in the studio and they were like, tell us about the offside. And he was just in the studio sitting there. And then against the Spurs-Liverpool game, they just showed Klopp for about 3 minutes just walking the touchline, just putting his hand out, going, And I was thinking, why do we need... You're taking up like a good 1/6 of my screen with Klopp just pointing. I can see that from just the game cam, the match camera. It's like,
They have some funky camera angles on their matches as well. They had a shot at White Hart Lane. It was like it was straight down off of the top of the stand. You couldn't tell what was going on.
Do you think they'll have like a camera in the ball next? Do you think that's
the next thing for BT to do?
Stop spending so much money getting rights. Put something to actually showing it properly.
Coverage. Indeed. All right, let's wrap it up there now. Thank you very much to Mac and Stephen on your first pod this week. Don't forget, catch us on the iTunes Library Football Fans Podcast. Also on the SoundCloud Football Fans Podcast. And we're on Twitter also at FFP_11. At FFP_11. Until next week. Peace.